Edge of the Headlights podcast. My name is Rob, and sitting across from me tonight in the Sin City is Marty. How are we doing tonight, Marty?
Yeah. No, I'm good. I am good.
Aren't you happy to be in the city of glitz and glamour and crazy homeless people?
Right. God bless the 6 AMers.
6 AMers, you call them? Yeah.
The zombie people.
Well, weird. Technically, we're not in Vegas, folks. But when you hear this, we will be in Vegas. Right. So we're getting excited. My wife's like, you've been planning this trip for 6 months. And I'm like, it's the one enjoyment I get. I like Vegas. I really do. I really, really do.
Yeah.
I've been to all over the world.
Right.
I prefer Vegas. I've been to Jamaica. I've been to Korea. I've been to Germany, Europe. Yep. I'm like, I'd like Vegas.
I like sand.
Fuck off. I hate sand. So how are you doing, Marty, besides drinking your Purple Gate Tourade? Oh, Powerade.
Poo-rade. Oh, I'm not bad. I'm not well.
It's, I feel like I haven't talked to you for at least 20 minutes.
I know. It's been like 15. I don't know. As we're recording this, we're gearing up for a shit ton of snow finally for our winter.
Yeah.
It's...
About time.
Pretty much. Yeah, first day of spring.
Yeah, first day of spring.
So, you know, we're heading for snow in the Midwest. But
it's tradition, dude.
Right, that's no doubt, man. Like I said, I don't really care even. It's coming on a weekend. I don't gotta fucking be anywhere.
Nope.
It can dump all it wants. It's March. It's not gonna be here long.
No.
I'm actually looking forward. I'm hoping it just like blows like a motherfucker Saturday. Because then I'm just gonna sit and watch the thing. Like we talked about a couple weeks ago.
No, you hear about, we're going to start off with some science-y articles like we normally do.
Ew.
This one's got me a little bit concerned.
Really?
Yeah. A great swarm of earthquakes has been detected by scientists in recent days, and is raising alarms over the possibility of more volcanic activity sometime in the future. The earthquakes are taking place off the coast of Washington, and scientists have clocked as many as 200 micro-earthquakes in 1 hour in the recent days.
Oh, wow.
Scientists at the University of Washington have stated that it is possible that the quakes could lead to the Juan de Fuca Ridge erupting within a few weeks or years. Hang on a second. If the volcano does erupt, though, it will likely be mild and not affect anybody's life in any significant way.
Yes.
The Juan de Fuca Ridge is a volcano that sits more than 16,000 feet beneath the Pacific Ocean and 150 miles off the coast of Washington. It is a mid-ocean spreading center and a divergent plate boundary and runs generally north. Now, remember that when I said runs generally north.
Right.
Scientists have observed a significant uptick in geological activity regarding the ridge in the recent days. More than 1,000 tiny earthquakes that were detected in one day as scientists watched, and it is this pattern of increasing behavior that leads the geologists to believe that an eruption of the volcano is on the horizon sooner or later. Now, if you go onto Google Earth, I love this map because I'm like, you can actually type this in.
Right.
And it's on a fault line. You can seriously see the fault line. It runs kind of to the north, but the scary thing is they have one that it's like a 90-degree fault line.
Oh,
it's like makes a 90 degrees. I'm like, they're not really worried about that.
Maybe not. Maybe not.
And they're just recently in the news. But like last week or so, they actually off Japan. They're like, yeah, we got a new island coming.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it's just like that was in how many thousands of feet of water, and they're like, yeah, let's go have an island by next week.
Yep. Well, there's also been a lot of like ground faults opening up around the world, too, where it's like, hey, there was nothing here yesterday. Oh, here's a fucking 3-foot-wide crevasse that goes a quarter of a mile.
Great.
Along tectonic plates.
Are we going to live through 2012 again? Right. The movie with John Cusack?
Oh, I don't want to sit through that again. Not even John Cusack made that movie really, really good. Goddamn. Yeesh. No, I don't think I can sit through that again.
No.
But yeah, no, there have been a few of them that are in fault areas where it's like overnight, basically, these crevasses are opening up in the ground. They're like,
yeah, that's normal.
This wasn't here yesterday. No, don't worry about it. I'm sure the sheep can jump over it. We'll be fine. Like, what the fuck? No, that's something you should probably be looking into, guys. Just saying. Might want to look into this just a little bit.
So, we're going to kind of get some weird stuff. I got some movie news from Marty.
Boy.
Oh, yeah, I did write the right stuff down. This is my good list.
They're making the right stuff.
Me and Marty, actually, we watch a lot of independent movies on Tubi. We are not into the main article yet. We did a movie thing a couple weeks ago. That's just something for him. Because we both like this movie called Something in the Dirt.
Oh, yeah.
It's a crazy, independent wild movie. Takes place at an L.A. apartment.
Yeah, weird fucking film.
But the same guys, I don't know if Marty knew this, but the same guys that made that also made The Endless.
Oh, really?
The Endless, which is about a remote camp in California. Yep. It's like a cosmic.
Really cool movie.
Yeah, The Endless is a really good movie. It keeps you guessing till the very end. Yeah, there is no end to it, what I'm saying.
No.
It's just good.
Yeah. It's
wild. But I don't know if you know this, they're coming out with a new movie.
Oh, really?
It's called Things Will Be Different.
Oh, interesting.
I read the download on it, and it's like, it's going to be just as good as Something in the Dirt and The Endless.
Yeah, I had no idea the same guys did that. That's interesting.
See, Something in the Dirt may not be for everybody.
No, it's weird.
It's a weird, it's but it's high. It's slow, but it's also high thinking. You got to have high thinking.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, you can probably be high. You probably get better.
Yeah, right.
But The Endless is really good. It's kind of got a weird. At the beginning, it's got a campy feel to it. Yeah. But then it knocks you hard into the cosmic core.
Well, it goes for half the movie. It's really kind of slow.
Yeah.
Where it's basically these brothers who were involved with a cult. UFO cult when they were growing up. Their family was. And they get drawn back to the place where they were raised. And it just, once it goes off the rails, it gets really off the rails. But it's so good. I would say.
And there's a time travel in it, too.
Yeah. Now, Something in the Dirt, I would say, is more of a high concept.
There we go. That's the word film I was looking for.
Really, really good. I actually watched it just a couple weeks ago. Really cool movie. But, it is not a movie probably for everybody, because there is no real definite
answers
to anything in the end of this. You're like,
you take away what you want.
Right. Really good movie. Yeah, no, I'm definitely excited for any movie those guys are going to put together. So.
Well, maybe we'll be excited for this one. Probably not. You ever heard of the Pooniverse?
Not sure if I ever
know. The Pooniverse? You have not heard of the Pooniverse. I just like saying that word because it sounds like, I don't know. You ever seen the movie Blood and Honey?
I have not watched it. Yeah. Oh, I did know they were going to be doing this.
Well, it's already done.
Yeah.
But Winnie the Pooh, they took Winnie the Pooh and they put him in Blood and the Honey. Yep. They're actually doing a Pooniverse Monsters Assemble.
Yes, I did see that.
It's a horror crossover film bringing together dark and horrifying versions of well-known children's characters like Winnie the Pooh, Bambi, Peter Pan, and others battle it out in monster versus monster scenarios. Some of the movies have... the movie is a collaboration project between Jagged Edge Productions and ITN Studios. Yes, the crossovers will feature monsters from prior films teaming up against survivors from these movies.
Good times.
They have standalone movies including Bambi the Reckoning, Peter Pan's Neverland Nightmare, Pinocchio Unstrung. I don't think I want to see that one. That's going to be graphic, I think.
Pretty wild.
Along with the sequel to Winnie Pooh, Blood and Honey are expected to debut before the crossover.
Interesting. Yeah, I'd seen they were going
to
be doing.
I have yet to watch Blood and Honey because every time
I've not gotten to watch it
yet. Every time I want to watch it, my youngest is in the room, and I'm like, I'm not going to traumatize him much. Yeah,
I have not got to watch it yet. I do need to see it, but
I thought you would appreciate.
Yeah, that. No, it's
hopefully because I'm pretty sure that things are different. Actually, it got a lot of rave reviews at South by Southwest.
Yeah,
and I'm like, man, that's not going to come to Tubi right away. Damn it.
No. I keep hoping my friend
gets it. And actually, The Endless, it's only on DVD now.
Oh, really?
You can buy the DVD for it.
Yeah, that's...
So here's a question for you. My wife plays it because...
It's been out for a while.
I buy it DVDs all the time still.
Right.
What's the next format?
I honestly don't think there's going to be one, to be honest with you.
So it's DVDs or just straight streaming?
Yeah, DVD, Blu-ray is the last, I would say, of probably our formats. And until, everything goes tits up and we have to rebuild things for 200 years before we start making movies again. I think everything, even games, you're seeing less and less are going to be coming onto actual hard copy just because it's so easy anymore to just stream shit.
What happens when the sun takes all the internet and all my games?
Well, that's just it. Well, see, we're already running into some of these issues with buying digital. Because there are some of these places like Amazon. You bought a movie on Amazon. Oh, they no longer have the rights to it. You can no longer watch it.
Yeah.
So did you really buy it at all?
No.
It's in court right now. They're actually going through this. Because that has been my issue with digital, buying digital stuff, streaming it, whatever, I don't care. But buying digital copies, yeah, it's convenient, it's on there. But we ran into this just last year with PlayStation. They had a deal with the National Geographic or one of the Discovery channels. Well, there were whole series that people had bought through PS. Well, they lost the rights to having that. All those people just lost those shows. You weren't getting any money back for it. They just don't exist anymore on your stuff. You've spent, you know, $150 on all the seasons of Survivor Man or whatever the fuck it was, and it no longer exists. You can't watch it because it is no longer streamable off their base. What do you do at that point? You know, these people paid money to watch it through your service, and you lost that service.
You got to do the American thing, the American way, take them to court.
Yeah, and that's what is going to be happening, I'm sure. Well, I think they did end up working some deal with people, but it certainly wasn't giving you all your money back or your access to your shows. Because, yeah, they lose it to, like, Max or somebody else pays more to have that content. And it's like, sorry, Sony, you lost that. You didn't really technically buy that. What kills me with like the streaming and buying digital, the digital version costs just as much as a fucking DVD to buy it. And that's fucking asinine to me because most of your cost of buying DVD Blu-ray is the cost of the material.
Yeah.
To just stream this off of your site, it shouldn't cost me $25. It
cost me like $2.
You know, it should be like the $5 rental. Like, yep. Hey, there you go. You can watch it whenever you want. You paid $5 for it. Because it costs them nothing other than the
pushing the two buttons server. Yep.
I mean, that is all it is costing.
Well, they got a computer that has to run that system. They had to write that program for 20 minutes.
The servers, but they hold a lot. You know, I mean, it's like there's no way. I just can't justify paying you $25 for nothing.
But you really. Will. But you will.
Oh, I won't. That's the deal. I will go without watching movies anymore because it's like I don't want to see it that bad. There are very few I actually even go buy on hard copy unless I find a good deal on it. So I'm like, I'm not paying $35.
Well, I buy Nicolas Cage movie anytime I can find a hard copy because I buy Nicolas Cage's movies.
But yeah, even like Dune, I didn't buy that on Blu-ray till it had been out for like 9 months and Target had it down to like $12. I'm like, oh, $12, yeah. No, I love this. I'm not paying you $35 for that Blu-ray though.
No.
$12? That's a good deal. I'm going to buy that, you know. But yeah, the actual format, the days of the format wars from like regular show are long gone because everything's just going to move on to streaming.
Yep.
That's just how it is. And like I said, until it all goes to shit and we have to rebuild society for 200 years and start making movies again, then we'll go back to the old technologies until we figure out the satellites again.
Everything runs in cycles. It does.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like this,
Foo Fighters. Ancient Egyptian VHS tapes.
We actually, speaking of Egyptian, we went from hieroglyphs to emojis, so it's a cycle.
Yeah, no, it really is.
No. Well, tonight's topic is going to be the classic Foo Fighters.
Right.
With Dave Grohl, and we're going to talk about the history before he left Nirvana.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, even before he joined, you know, it's a good time. Be a life history of the great Dave Grohl.
That's all I know about him. He was in Nirvana. That's all I know about him. And he's a drummer.
That's ridiculous. That's all I know. God damn, no, Dave Grohl's a great human being. No, but no, it's and their movie was great.
We got the Foo Fighter joke out of the way. That's good.
Right, man.
We're talking about Foo Fighters that were initially described as a type of UFOs reported and named by the U.S. 415th Night Fighter Squadron. These are basically what the World War II or one?
Yeah, two.
World War II pilots were saying, like, they have these balls of light on their wingtips and following them and all this. We're going to go through some of this, what they think it was.
Right.
And it's a few other wartime stories with UFOs and the same thing after this.
Right. Now, the earliest sightings of what will later become Foo Fighters was there were a few over Europe reported in like 42.
Yep.
But it wasn't until like November
March of
42,
the same month.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. But yeah, no, it wasn't really till November of 44 where it really blew up and they started getting reports all over the place. Pacific, Europe. All over started seeing these things after November in 44.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. See you later, guys. That's all.
No, they usually distract. When pilots flying over Western Europe by night reported seeing fast moving round glowing objects following the aircraft. The objects were variously described as fiery, glowing red, white, or orange. Some pilots described them as resembling Christmas tree lights.
Yep.
And reported that they seemed to toy with the aircraft while making wild turns before simply vanishing. Pilots and crew reported the objects flew together in formation with their aircraft and behaved as they were under intelligent control, but never displayed hostile behavior. However, they could not be outmaneuvered or shot down. The phenomenon was so widespread that the lights are nicknamed the European Theater of Operation. They were often called Kraut Fireballs, but the most part called Foo Fighters. The military took the sighting seriously, suspecting that the mysterious sightings may be a secret German weapon. But further investigation revealed that the German and Japanese pilots had reported similar sightings.
Yeah, that was the wild things. Yeah, it was like for a long time, I was like, oh, man, this is some secret bullshit. And we knew that, Germany had some really high tech for the time, crazy shit they were working on. And that's what they thought this was some wild shit. It wasn't until after when they started seeing all these debriefs from German and Japanese soldiers after the war, they were like, oh, fuck, they were seeing them too.
Yeah.
They thought they were us.
that was us.
Everybody's like, oh, man, those damn Americans, what'd they figure out this time? And in the meantime, we're like, what did those damn Krauts figure out on us, man?
Yeah, it's like they had like the sighting from December 1941 in the Indian Ocean. From the deck of the SS Pulaski, a Polish merchant vessel transporting British troops. Two sailors reported a strange object glowing with green light about half the size of a full moon, as it appeared to us. They alerted a British officer who watched the movements of the object with them for over an hour. See, I find that interesting because greenish lights over the ocean is very similar to what actually Christopher Columbus saw when he came over to America.
Right, absolutely.
Before, like the night before, he found he brought in his journals, but he didn't tell the King of Spain about it because he said it depicted a menorah, which was a Jewish thing.
Yeah.
And they were not very well liked at the time.
No. Most of Europe was very Catholic at that time.
And then you have the pilot Brian Lumsden, a New Zealander flying with the number 3 squadron night flight, encountered two amber or orange colored lights that followed him on an intruder mission over northern France in December of 1942. One light was higher than the other, which appeared to roll out wingtip navigation lights from an aircraft. The lights pursued until he reached the English Channel. Another pilot from his unit experienced a similar phenomenon the following evening with a green light. The story was eventually published in the Christchurch Star Sun newspaper in November 4th, 1955 edition. See, there
took a while.
But. Yeah, just a couple days. Just a couple days. But like, there's a lot of reports from too where they like they act like aircraft and they kind of mimic the aircraft too.
Yeah.
Because with usually they say like a single light, and like it kind of turned outside. You can see like two. Tip wing lights, it said. You see that quite a bit, too. Then you have, career U.S. officer Dwayne Adams often related that he had witnessed two occurrences of a bright light which paced his aircraft for about a half an hour and then rapidly ascending into the sky. Both incidents occurred at night, both over the South Pacific, and both were witnessed by the entire aircraft crew. The first sighting occurred shortly after the end of World War II, while Adams pilots a B-52 bomber. The second sighting occurred in the early 1960s when Adams was piloting a KC-135 tanker.
Ooh, big boys.
Then they go into like, I want to say, me and Marty, I know I've said this, I don't know if Marty agrees with it, but I don't want to say, these are like observation drones from our future or something.
Yeah, somewhere.
And they're like, because these always show up like really, really big events. World War II.
Yep, yep.
And every place they go, like in the South Pacific, major conflict area.
Yep.
Europe, major conflict area. Indian Ocean, all that stuff, that whole area there. And that's where they're only seen. They're not seen in America.
Yeah.
They're actually not reported in America.
No, we have no reports of those, certainly at the time.
Yeah.
The first ones, 42 even to 44, you're predating the Roswell explosion.
Yeah.
By, 5 years.
Yep.
And even predating Kenneth Arnold's saucer sightings, which would have been, 44? Let's say 46, that was not a thing that was really in our pop culture psyche at that time. And not at all.
Most of the time it was blamed on, it's St. Elmo's fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Sandy Nemo's fire would be really close to the edge of your wingtips. Because, like, with ships, they can see it, like, from the crow's nest.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's static energy from it going through the water, and it's just arching, but it's attached to the ship, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just,
This is like, no, these are not attached. Sandy Nemo's fire was the longest time they believed, it's just Sandy Nemo's fire. It's not.
Yeah, no, these reacted completely different. Any of the electrostatic like that is actually in contact with your vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's coming from. That's what's creating it. It's not flying off around you. It's not, you know, ball lightning flying around you. That's not what this is.
See, ball lightning, I've seen it once in my life.
Never. I've never seen it.
Never have?
No.
I thought you were being sarcastic. It falls through the clouds. It doesn't just fall straight through the clouds.
Right.
Or pretty much straight. It doesn't go off to the side and do all ziggy zaggy.
Right.
Because I saw it, I'm like, oh, that's a UFO. Then I'm watching, I'm like, my dad's like, no, that's ball lightning.
That's cool as shit. Yeah, I've always wanted to see it, but I've never seen it.
Yeah.
It would be cool.
It's trippy as hell.
Yeah, I bet. I bet it is. But yeah, no, these reports of these things basically would follow them around. Like I said, it never really got overly aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they would just follow these planes around for a while and then just whoop, zip off. They're like, no, okay, well, we thought we needed. We're gonna take off. And
what was that,
leaving Steven, the pilots going.
What was that Steven Spielberg movie where they had it starts off in World War II with Foo Fighters, and then
the one with the alien abduction, all that, the TV one he did.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I that was really good. But that had that dealt really a lot cool. with Foo Fighters and
Yep.
And it's just like, yeah, they're just observing. I don't think they're aliens. They may be extraterrestrial technology.
It could be possible.
I would believe that. Like that, there'd be something remote.
Right. Yeah, drone-ish, disposable.
Just think.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're like, just picture this. Aliens sent out their Foo Fighters. Holy shit! These aliens are all killing themselves. Right. Let's get the hell out of here. Let's just have kill them off, and then we'll take over the planet.
They are nuts. Let's go.
Yeah,
we'll be back.
Just think if it was an alien drone, and they're seeing a massive world war. Everybody's fighting each other.
Three-fourths of the world is erupted. I mean, because you got to remember, Africa was involved in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of fighting over there, all through the Middle East, all over Asia, all over Europe. You know, three-fourths of the fucking planet.
Except for one continent, which would have been the U.S.
Yeah, and chunks of Russia, because nobody was going way up into there. They tried and
failed
multiple times till Nazi Germany was just like, yeah, fuck them. We're not trying to fight up in the cold. Screw that. But yeah, no, most of it. Canada, North America, South America really didn't have a whole lot going on.
South America after the World War.
Their ties after.
Yeah.
During that, but everything pretty much east of North and South America was just in flames, you know, like it was everywhere.
But just think, if you're an alien and you're like, that could have been that first chance for alien contact, and we cucked it up.
Right.
You're at war with each other. That kind of does make sense.
We were fighting a silly German man, you know.
But I'm just saying, think about it.
Yeah.
Aliens come from a distance. Sorry, that could, and they're like, yeah, they'll probably end up just shooting us. Let's just see what happens here.
Right. Well, they're not shooting my drone yet. Okay, they're shooting at my drone. Okay, well, we're going to get out of here. We'll watch them a while. Maybe it'll get better. It does not get better, sir.
then pretty much goes throughout World War II. Then they just die off after World War II. But there's also reports, like, in other major conflicts, too, with these Foo Fighters. It's like, they're similar to what UFO.
Right.
Because, like, in Vietnam was a big thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of strange UFO reports out of there.
And it sucks trying to find them because they're not
classified,
readily
available.
Found. You do find a few, and they are interesting.
And they're probably the same ones you have that I probably got.
Right, yeah. It's, you know, the same stuff. But
you have, like, the HMAS Hobart.
Yeah.
Along the North Vietnamese. Although the North Vietnamese had helicopters early in the war, they rarely used helicopters by middle of the war. Thus, a lot of UFO sightings from the war revolved around bright floating objects because their crews knew that they couldn't be North Vietnamese helicopters. In June 1968, Australian spotters saw 30 floating lights near the DMZ, fearing another Tet Offensive-style attack. NATO forces promptly scrambled F-4 fighters and patrol boats to intercept. The lights turned seaward and came under fire from various ships in the area. Unfortunately, a U.S. Navy Swift boat got hit by friendly fire missiles and sank, killing five of the crew. They got abducted. Amid the confusion, the Australian destroyer HMAS Hobart sat ready to engage the enemy. At 3:30 a.m., the commander called action stations when the radar room detected an airplane coming in fast with no IFF identification, friend or foe. The plane opened fire on the HMS Hobart, damaging the ship and killing some crew members. Throughout the confusion, the F-4s tried to make contact with the floating lights, but there were only a few inconclusive engagements. Later that night, the pilots returned to their base. Next morning, no wreckage of enemy helicopters was found, even though there was a flurry of anti-aircraft fire trying to intercept the lights. Eventually, the incident was chalked up as atmospheric disturbances or possible helicopter activity.
Right.
But I'm just saying, they just said it wasn't, because I'm pretty sure an F-4 could have shot down an old-fashioned Huey.
Yeah, yeah, because that's what they were running, was like the old-style Hueys. Yeah. Not even like the new 65, 68 Hueys we were using. It was the old Korean War Hueys.
Yeah.
F-4s at the time.
Top dog.
They were one of the fastest, most vicious jets that was out in the world at the time. They were top fucking machines.
Yep.
Blowing down a 25-year-old Huey wouldn't be too difficult for them. Let's be honest. They were nasty little pieces of machine. And hell, we even used the F-4s right up until early 80s. I think we were still using some of them. I think Marines were still using some.
Yep.
Pretty handy piece of equipment until we started replacing it with 18s, 16s, yep. 15s.
But again, that's a major conflict. The aliens are like, let's go away for a few years.
Right.
Oh, they're fucking shooting each other again.
Here we are. We're in the jungle. Oh, my God. Come on.
They have the Pete Mazzulli sighting. At the beginning of the Vietnam War, Pete Mazzulli was a young soldier, although not interested in UFOs at the time, that he was shipped off to the front. Mazzulli experienced sighting that made him a believer in UFOs. Throughout his story, Mazzulli noted that he saw many meteors that moved in a way that was unlike normal shooting stars. Later in the war, he even had a direct experience with a UFO. While on patrol, his squad got pinned down by enemy soldiers. They stayed low and hid, hoping to find a way out of the mess. As they were trying to figure out a way home, they saw a bright object rise over the paddy fields and hover in the air. When the object rose in the air, they took fire from American warships to the south, but surprisingly, the Viet Cong also started shooting at the floating lights. Neither side could touch the object. Mazzulli recalls seeing the shells explode just short of the lights. Even though they were right on target, whether the lights were neither the Americans nor the Viet Cong recognized them as friendly. Experience had such an effect on Mazzulli that he founded an organization called the Scientific Bureau for Investigation. After the war, based out of New York, Mazzulli dedicated his life to researching UFOs and experiences and other paranormal events. If you want to see a really cool video on this, go on YouTube, look up the Smoke Pit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The guy, he does all nothing but wartime UFO sightings or weird things. Check this guy out. We don't know him. He don't know us.
No.
But if you do, say, hey, we sent him there, and maybe we'll talk to him and get him on.
Right, yeah. Now, he does short videos. Which are his Smoke Pit stuff. Then he has his regular stuff, which is off of wartime stories.
Yep.
Also
Fog of War, I think it is.
Yeah, also connected with bedtime stories, and I think they're all actually under Ballin Podcast now. I think they're all together now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is kind of cool. But they were all ones I'd found individually, and I think just recently, they've been all put under Ballin Productions, which is pretty cool for me. I'm like, that makes sense. These guys are all good guys I listen to. His wartime story stuff is really, really good. Whenever he has a new one, he hasn't a new one for a while, but it's about 3 years of catching up. If you haven't listened to him, you can go way back. There's some really interesting stories he's pulled up from these different people. He's former military himself.
I'm former military too, but you see some weird shit out there. It's like the smoke pit is a smoke pit. You're not supposed to smoke when you're in the field, but find an area and smoke.
But yeah, it's really recommended.
So, yes, it is. Do you have any stories? Because I feel like I'm doing all the time.
No, you go ahead and stories.
Fine.
Go ahead and do your stories.
We're going to do like the Skylab 3 UFO.
Oh, God, yeah.
Remember that one?
Yep.
Another incident that did not occur in Vietnam, but still occurred during the war, was the UFO sighting by Skylab in 1973. The Skylab 3 mission was plagued with problems, including a frequent loss of radio contact. Right before the three astronauts on Skylab returned to Earth, they were out of radio contact and noticed something strange while gazing out the wardroom window. Grabbing his camera, astronaut Owen Grant took a picture of the object, which looked weird and squiggly. After radio contact came back, the astronauts told Capcom that they had seen a red light oscillating outside the space station. Then it got washed out by the sun and became invisible. It was the closest, brightest object that they had seen during the mission. After returning to Earth, Garak stuck to his story. In his debriefing, fellow astronaut Jack Losbach mentioned that this was the only satellite of many observed during the mission that looked like something not from Earth. Yeah. In recent years, skeptics have chalked up the picture to debris or optical trick, but it remains one of the earliest UFO sightings in space.
Yeah. That's what sucks with a lot of the space reports. It's always like, oh, no, that's just debris catching light and ice chunks off of that. That's what that was. It's like, that doesn't look like debris to me. That seems to be changing direction. I don't think debris just randomly...
It doesn't work that way in space.
...changes direction when it's in orbit.
Like with NASA or people like that, they're like, oh, that's just debris. Well, if you study space, you got to go, if you shoot a bullet out of a gun, you go backwards, the bullet stays right where it's at because it doesn't travel very far because
it
doesn't work like an atmosphere.
No, it's... well.
When something comes off, it either you go opposite of each other.
Yep. That's where, like, a lot of sci-fi shows get shit on with how their fighter starships work because they won't fly like they do here in atmosphere.
Yeah.
And a lot of shows, they do. Even Star Wars, to some extent, does some of that. It's in space, but it's flying like it would be in atmosphere. There are a few shows that have pulled off, okay, this is how things are different that way. Space 99, or... Space Above and Beyond was very good at space physics, things like that. Because, yeah, they do not work the same way they do with gravity and air like we have down on here. Things just don't.
You got to think three-dimensional.
Yeah, it's...
It sucks at playing Star Wars, a video game, because they do that to you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's,
I'm like, you just fly straight. Nope, you got to figure out they're below you or above you, and you got to
get that. Hit the brakes, zip around. Yep. But, yeah, no, it's... I get irritated sometimes with a lot of, because there has been some pretty cool footage that have come off of shuttles, the ISS, and every one of them just gets chunked up to like, oh, that was ice chunks that were built up on this thing, and that's what that is. The light catching it, and it's like, I just don't think that's, some of it, yeah, okay, yeah, no, I can see what you're saying there, but there's some of them, it's like, that's not reacting, I don't think, and granted, I'm not a PhD physicist, but it doesn't seem like that's how debris that is in orbit would start acting, you know, just like out of nowhere with no force upon it, would it all of a sudden just 90 degree go a different direction?
It's
it
like just that, doesn't do it's that. It's just like that one from the space station where they show something coming to the atmosphere.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it looks like a laser beam shoots up at it, and right before a laser beam, it goes a totally different direction.
Zoop. Yep.
And it don't work that way.
It's like, no, most of that junk is in orbit.
Yeah.
And it is falling its orbit. Eventually, it's going to fall into orbit because of gravity.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they don't just randomly on their own change direction without hitting something else to then send it off in another direction. That just doesn't make sense to me.
No, but the government tells us what is right. Must believe the government.
Right. They're always right.
Well, let's go with this Las Vegas 1962 incident. The military had already experienced incidents with UFOs as they were building up to a war in Vietnam. For example, in 1962, there was a UFO crash at the Nellis Air Force Base in Las Vegas. Initial reports stated that the radar tracked a fast-moving object. That's actually a really good documentary called Fast Walkers. If you get a chance, watch it. Over Mesquite near Las Vegas, but had lost control after that. Days later, witnesses started to come forward with their own stories of the incident.
Oh.
Contradicting stories popped up about where the mysterious object had landed. Some people believe that it crashed in Utah. Others believed that it had set down near a power station in Eureka, Nevada. Still, others reported that they had seen an explosion over Mesquite. Most sources indicated that the object had crashed somewhere near Las Vegas. Multiple people called the Las Vegas Sheriff Department. So, okay, stop right there. Hang on. To report odd lights in the sky near Las Vegas. Other witnesses talked about seeing objects explode over the desert. Residents around the city led search teams in the desert to find the crash site, but nobody ever found the debris or evidence of the crash object. When the U.S. government ended their investigation, they noted that radar contact was true, but there is no way to trust visual sightings. Thus, the case was impossible to analyze. So, the Sheriff's Department in Las Vegas should not have been upset with that one incident where they had aliens in the backyard.
Yeah, right. Yeah, this is not
They've new had previous for you. Experience.
Right. This is not new, man.
They should have, like, a, looks like they have an SOP for it.
Yeah, you would think.
Someone calls in aliens, this is what you do.
Yeah, right. That case still.
I don't know. That case is very tricky. It's
weird. Weird.
Then you have the B-52 shot down by a UFO. Another interesting U.S. story in Vietnam revolves around a crashed B-52 bomber. The paper trail for this story is vague, but it remains a common tale in UFO circles. The incident is part of a Project Grudd, the U.S. Air Force investigation of UFO sightings, which supposedly ended in 1951. But the UFO researchers believe that it's still operating in Vietnam. In 1970s, Green Beret Captain William English was assigned to Laos to investigate a downed B-52 bomber. The craft was lost under mysterious circumstances, and the U.S. Air Force was eager to retrieve evidence from it. Captain English successfully found the plane, which seemed in unusually good shape. The only damage on the bomber was the normal damage expected from crash landing. When the English opened the hatch, he found all the crew still strapped in the streets, but horribly disfigured and mutilated. There was no other damage to the cockpit. English collected samples, turned the bodies in for autopsies, but after the incident, the Laos government deported him. Whether or not the story is true, it is an interesting tale from the end of the Vietnam War. See, that...
Well, I'm kind of wondering what their mission was.
Well, they had to retrieve evidence from the B-52. They said
no, I mean the B-52's mission.
What are you talking about?
Right.
Why would they be doing something crazy over Laos?
Right. Yeah, it's where it's like, fuck,
so paranoid.
We need to get that plane back. Why?
You're so paranoid about the government. The government does only good things.
Right. Yeah, the government, you know, made thermite just so they couldn't keep vehicles left anywhere. Yeah, no, it's still there. It has no motor because we burned a hole straight fucking through it. But no, keep that fucking Humvee. It's fine.
I've heard stories similar to this. Like, mm-hmm. We do anytime you do research, like some pilot goes there. Finds a plane in intact condition, but the pilot's fucked up.
Yeah.
Now, it's happened during the 80s, or it's a different, similar story in the 90s.
Yeah.
Is it just an urban tale?
I'm guessing it probably is.
Because like said, the same story seems to be circulated at different airs, the same, pretty much same guy. You can't, there's no English, this Captain English, he doesn't exist.
Yeah, there's no paper work showing that he was involved with anything. Like being alive or having social security.
If we're wrong, if you're out there, William English or your grandson or your son,
right.
Call us up, email us, say you guys are wrong.
Yeah, we got proof. All right, cool. I want to see that.
Yeah,
yeah. No, it has a lot of the earmarks of what you would find on a tale like that,
mm-hmm.
where it's just enough believability where you're like, oh, okay, yeah. There's names. Here's this. Yeah, we were flying, doing weird shit over Laos. We know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's, and then it, like a lot of those stories, then it evolves with time to where it's, oh, it was one of these planes that was.
Yeah.
And it crashed down here over in South America.
And they were trying to retrieve something, artifact or something.
Right.
Not that I wouldn't like the story to be true, but I kind of heard other stories from the 80s and the 90s. Same premise.
Yeah, same kind of. Unless there's a rash every decade of pilots and shit getting mutilated and their plane being dropped to the ground. If that's the case, wow, that's horrifying.
Yeah.
But it just seems like there's just too many similarities in a lot of those stories to not be just kind of a new updating. And again, like I said, it works because, like I said, it's. Still,
and we're still talking about
a story that's passed around commonly in UFO circles.
Mm-hmm. Then we got the Nha Trang Base 1966 sighting. The U.S. base at Nutrang, I probably said that wrong, was an important strategic location for the U.S. in 1966. It was also the site of one of the most interesting UFO encounters of the war. Unlike other encounters, this one has a few thousand soldiers as witnesses.
Oh.
During the night, without fighting, the American GIs got together to watch an outdoor movie. Bulldozers were working on the hills nearby, and two Sky Raider attack planes were warming up, their engines on a mission. An oil tanker was close by in the harbor. As the soldiers watched their movie, the sky to the north suddenly lit up. Initially, the soldiers thought that was a flare, but suddenly the light moved toward the base. Eyewitnesses reported the light moved erratically, speeding up and slowing down. It was flying at around 7,600 meters, up 25,000 feet above them. Suddenly, the light stopped and dived downward, hovering 300 to 500 feet off the ground. When the lights ascended, all the electrical equipment in the base shorted out, including the engines on the Sky Raider and the bulldozers. The light hovered for a bit and then shot straight up, disappearing into the night sky. Eventually, the power came back on, but nobody could understand what had happened.
Hmm. It's a pretty big EMP blast to knock all that out.
Yeah.
Eesh.
But this is where then they're like, oh, the everybody in the UFO community gets shit. Well, like, you have 1,000 soldiers. Their life depends on being observant.
Right.
Especially during the Vietnam War.
Right.
I don't know how you can dismiss half that stuff.
Yeah, because, I mean, you realistically, your life depended on seeing something coming in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because there were sneak attacks all the time on shit. And you were constantly on edge. That's why there were a lot of those guys, especially once you got later into the war, that really did get heavy into drugs because they were fucking constantly stressed, and they're just like, fuck it.
Yeah, they got dull. They're take the edge off. It's
fucking got to calm down somehow, and I'm going to be stoned as shit all day. Big picture, probably not my best decision.
Nothing against you Vietnam vets. Man, you guys are heroes. I don't care. Are heroes.
I get it, yeah.
Yeah, you guys are heroes.
Because it's like you're on edge 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Like even going to sleep. Am I going to get woken up?
You can tell from the Vietnam vets that actually seen shit, they don't talk about it, ever.
No, no.
The ones that talk about all this shit didn't see shit for action. Yeah, they're office guy. The ones that actually over the wire and don't talk about it, like, I don't want to talk about it.
Yep.
They've seen some shit.
Yeah, it's nope. Yeah, no, they've done some.
Yeah.
Been in some awful things.
Yep. But the most famous one was the patrol boat attack and the only known UFO photograph out of the Vietnam War.
Oh.
In 1968, two patrol boats in the DMZ between North and South Vietnam spotted a couple of UFOs approaching them. The two UFOs stopped and hovered over the first patrol boat. Crew members on the second patrol boat watched as a flash of light from the UFO completely engulfed the first boat and destroyed it in a huge explosion.
Yeah.
In a separate incident, the only known photograph of the UFO from Vietnam was taken in 1967. An American serviceman was riding in the back of a truck in Chu Lai when he spotted an odd object. With his Elektra 35 Yashica camera, the soldier took a picture of a cylindrical object hovering just above the country road. These sorts of experiences made UFO stories somewhat common in Vietnam. See, that's what that scares me. It's like the cylindrical object. You and me have talked about this before. That's just somebody doing a goddamn field trip.
Right, right. It's a bus.
Yeah, it's a bus.
You know, they're taking it out. I'm like, oh, watch the silly animals blasting at each other. Look at it. Look at that.
I don't know if it's from our future, different timeline, we discussed. But anytime I hear about them large cylindrical ones, they're just kind of like floating around like a big yellow bus. It's a goddamn field trip.
Yeah, it has to be. You know, like that's kind of what I equate it to.
Yeah.
But yeah, the boat one getting blown up. There were a few different stories that came out of things similar where they were people doing patrol up one of the rivers and seeing one of these things cup up over the trees and take shots at them. And they're just like, okay, we got to go.
Took the shot back.
Yeah. It's like, okay, yeah, well, we got to go, guys. We got to go.
See, but the really interesting thing, too, to me is I'm just going to go off my memory on this. But they just recently found the world's largest cave system is in Vietnam.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there is so many reports during the war of strange reptilian-type creatures.
Oh, yeah.
Well, these guys are on patrol going into this giant cave.
Yep.
And stuff coming out of this cave.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of reports where these people, our soldiers and that, were warned sometimes by local villagers of like, yeah, you don't mess with those things. You just ignore they're there. You pretend it's not there. It's not going to bother you.
Yeah.
If you start fucking with them, they will retaliate.
Because I'm trying to find research in this case. And I'm like, it's not one episode, so I'm going to just throw it in here.
Right.
Because these caves are so large, I can't remember the name of them.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But they have their own ecosystem.
Yeah,
once you get down in there, plants in there that are native nowhere else.
Yep.
They actually have clouds, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
And they're, it's like, and the cave is like 20 miles long or something like that.
Yeah, it's massive. Yeah, there are whole chunks of it that have completely different weather systems.
Yeah.
From what anything else around them. Yeah, no, there are multiple stories when you kind of dig around of people reporting seeing lizard people.
Yeah.
Coming in and out of little different cave systems.
Goddamn Silurians.
Going along, the rivers, just hunting, you know, the wild pig and shit like that. It's like, yeah, we just learned we don't mess with them. You just don't let them go on. You sit down.
They don't mess with us. Occasionally a villager might go missing.
Yep. Yeah, you just let them move on. Pretend that you don't see them. Hope they're not noticing you. And they just let them go till they were gone. They're like, okay, did you guys see that? What the fuck is that? There's a lot of stories of weird animals, period. In Vietnam.
Especially during the war, because...
The giant snakes, giant spiders.
There's just a recent video of a giant spider that make Pancake look like a little chihuahua.
Yeah. But yeah, it's...
And I don't know. That one's got me. I've watched that several times, and I've
seen it a couple times, too. And I'm like, I want to say it's bullshit, but... There's not enough markers in it that really scream bullshit in that video.
Like, I'm watching the feet is what I'm watching. I'm like, does it digitize at the feet so you can say it's CGI?
Right. Is there awkward movement that isn't natural arthropod, you know, or arachnid? But there's not.
Video changes places. I can't, like, some place said it was like a jungle was seen. And there's one where it says, this was taken in Georgia. I'm like, all right, people are just recycling this. And like, I don't even know where the original video is taken.
Right. I want to say it creepy. Was. Because I know there are stories through South America, I believe. Or maybe it was in Africa.
Africa, where that one with that car.
There are whole stories of these giant spiders. They are like 2 to 3 foot fucking spiders. Like, they are massive 4 foot. Big spiders that the people just don't go fucking with because they will kill you. And it's like, oh, okay. But I'm just going to trust you that those are there.
Yeah. I don't know, but then people are saying, no, they can't get that big. Well, there seems to be finding some big-ass spiders, that, like the huntsman spider is big as outstretched hand, and that's 2 inches.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, I mean, well, even
they got like little bitty hands.
Yeah, like the bird eater in South America is like 12-inch. It's a foot wide.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
it's not that it's hard to believe.
Yeah, it's the size of a fucking full-on dinner plate, you know, and it eats.
And I don't think it
will eat birds.
That's why spiders don't actually ever stop growing until they die. Do they?
I don't know.
I know snakes don't.
I don't know with them. Yeah, snakes, fish, typically, they will grow to whatever
size
they will.
You got to say excrete a chemical, and once their body comes in with their own chemical, then they stop growing.
Yep. But yeah, I don't know with spiders. I think a lot of times the predominant theory with insects is gravity and their need to breathe through their skin is what stops them from being bigger than what they are. But, which is why they say, you know, back in the day, because oxygen levels were so much more than what they are now, they did get bigger. But yeah, no, I can believe that there would be. Like we've seen spiders that have evolved to actually survive underwater. They spend 90% of their time underwater.
Yeah, they build nests underwater.
You know, in the words of Dr. Ian Malcolm, life will find a way. You know, I mean, it's what it does. So yeah, I can believe that's possible. Yeah, there's a whole lot of stories out of Vietnam of just weird giant snakes that they had come across that they went. The locals said, yeah, no, that's you know, the devil. That's the devil of the river. You don't mess with it. Just reports of people going over with helicopters going, what is that fucking thing down there? And it's this you know, 70-foot fucking snake that's just picking up cows and eating them. Yeah. You know, like there's a lot of wild stories came out of that place. Tunnel rat stuff is wild stories of stuff under there.
I'm so mad I lost that tunnel rat book. That was so good.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a lot of wild shit went on in Vietnam. Yeah. You know,
basically during the Vietnam War, the Viet Cong were just as bad as the Nazis on trying to do occult things. They were messing with that stuff, and there's actually reports of it where they're like, yeah, they come into this place and it's like, there's a temple to this weird ass god, and I'm like, they're using occult stuff because they were losing.
It was Hail Mary throws of like, hey, we got to do something.
We need Kali to come help us.
Yeah, let's summon an evil spirit. Maybe that'll kill some of these guys. Yeah.
Take over 10 of us, kill 2 of them.
Yeah, right.
But back to the Foo Fighters thing. The reason this whole article we did this research is because recently NASA has released plasma, and that's got me on this whole thing.
Yep.
Experts from the University of California in Arizona and Harvard Smithsonian, God, I didn't think them two would ever go together. Yeah. argue that the strange properties of plasma makes them appear to behave like living organisms, even though they are not alive.
Are they, though?
That's an oxymoron there.
Right.
Plasma can grow inside, replicate, make contact with each other, and may feed off electromagnetic radiation of satellite spacecraft, they argue. Excuse me. Huge glowing masses up to a mile wide, which behave similar to swarms of living organisms, have been filmed by 10 NASA space shuttle missions. While astronauts have reported strange phenomenon since 1960s. Astronauts Ed White, James McDivitt spotted a huge metallic object approaching the Gemini 4 orbiter in June 1965, while James Lovell reported a bogey at 10 o'clock high on a mission 6 months later. Even Buzz Aldrin has said that he and his crewmates had seen a strange L-shaped object, which was very big and coming closer during the Apollo 11 moon landing, although later he changed his story to say it was a booster panel.
Yeah. Again, it was debris.
Yeah, it was debris. Always debris. God dang! You think they have
it's space? It's debris, and on Earth, it's swamp gas. So you know, keep your story and stick with them, I guess.
Because it goes into plasma ray represent an alternate form of life. Some authors believe that the plasma may even represent an alternate form of life that is not carbon based, although others are skeptical. The team has called for research studying the plasma, including sending up satellites which generate electromagnetic pulse equipped with infrared X-ray cameras to capture the phenomenon. So we're going to go up there, do electric pulse, EMP pulse, and attack these things.
Maybe, yeah. I'm all for it, looking into that. Because, I mean, at this point, we do know, because for a long time it was like, oh, everything has to be carbon-based, otherwise it's not alive.
Yeah.
Well, we've seen things that are silicon-based that are thriving. They're not the same kind of life we are, but they are thriving. Yep. Which kind of forces us to change our view on what is life. And I could believe that there is energy beings, and that's what they're comprised of.
What we actually just think of as energy beings, maybe something biological.
Right.
They have luminescence, like glowing fish in the deep trench of the ocean. It's an attractor thing, or it's a deterrent thing.
Right. Well, I mean, even look at electric eel can generate its own electric pulse, which is fucking high voltage. Mm-hmm. What's to say these things don't have that same kind of property? Naked eye, we can't really see them until they're activating kind of that electric pulse.
And it's actually, that's how they fly, is by creating
that.
And
it's something that we see as, we recognize it as plasma, and maybe it's not actually
it's just really
plasma
bad methane
as we know it. Yeah, it's pancake.
they're lighting their farts on fire.
You're right. Damn you, dog. But yeah, no, I think it'd be interesting to look into. I don't know if maybe we should maybe not blast off some EMP pulses right away just to test the waters out a little.
Let's see if we can detonate this bomb and see if it actually, what happens?
We think there's some stuff on Mars. We're going to drop a nuke and see if it shows up that there's something living there.
Yeah, corpse.
That doesn't seem like a good plan, guys.
No.
It's not how you want to test things. It'll be interesting to see. I'm pretty excited for
that. If they ever do find out that we'll never see the
Oh, no. We'll never see the study of it. It'd be decades.
Yeah.
It'd be decades
before. Me and Marty, like a day before we die, we're in the nurse. You know,
right.
Plasma is a living being. God damn it.
They've been living next to us this whole time. Everything we thought was ball lightning and Foo Fighters are actually these living creatures that have been changing how we look at physics and everything else. Because now they're here and we're admitting.
There are new overlords because we tried to kill them.
Right. Well, you see, when we hit that bomb, right? They did not take kindly to that.
Remember all the power outages in New York City?
Right. Just saying. They found our power centers and decided that to give us warnings.
Yeah.
And told us to surrender. But you know, don't you worry about that part. Yeah. Well, no, I'm glad I'm dying.
So have you got anything else for these folks?
No, man. The Foo Fighter thing is just really just a cool thing. It's been around like our entire lives.
Yeah.
Like, we've heard stories of these things. You know, it's cool as hell. But yeah, I would say a lot of those to me tend to fit the idea of mechanized drone of some kind more than manned object.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting. You do see a lot of these kind of things over
major
big shit going.
Yeah. I'd say it's just aliens have bad timing. They're sending their drones at bad time.
They're like, wait a minute, we're getting a bunch of stuff coming off of that planet again. Let's go look with oh Christ.
The monkeys are shooting them.
Right. Well, realistically, you go basically from early 1900s right up through 1980. There wasn't a whole lot of time in there where we weren't fighting some bullshit. Like World War One, early 1900s, 1911, 1914. Go right into that in 1939.
Yeah.
It starts World War II. 1954 or whatever, I think Korea starts. Early 60s, and we go right into Vietnam. And that goes up basically till about the time I was born. 75, I think, was officially the end.
Yep.
So, yeah, for you know, 80 solid years, it's almost, you know, they got 7 years of rest probably, in there.
When the Nagasaki bomb, I was like, oh, they made an advancement. No, they just used to blow each other up. Right. God damn it.
Oh, man, maybe they're making this great power plant that they're going to reach for the star. Oh, no. No, they just... They just bombed a couple cities. Yeah. Oh, well.
We'll come back next in a few time. Years.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll get better here, right? Oh, no. What do you do? But, yeah, no, I mean, I've got nothing else on that. But it's a cool topic. You can find some interesting. There are actually, if you dig, a few photos from World War II of supposed Foo Fighters. The photo quality isn't very good because camera quality wasn't very good in you know, 1945. But yeah, there are a few interesting little camera shots from people that took
The interstellar buses.
Yeah, the little flashing fiery balls as they typically.
That's their turning signals.
It's just too bright. You guys don't see the rest of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think that's about all I
got. All right. Well, you folks have a good time. Me and Marty are going to go get drunk. Bye.